Next argued case is number 22-1364, People AI Incorporated against Klan Incorporated.
Good morning.
Mr. Riles.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
The patent eligibility decision here is erroneous, and I'd like to identify three principal characteristics of the claimed inventions that demonstrate that. First, the technology described in the claims is a technological improvement for a CRM system that creates software to implement objective rules to replace subjective and haphazard decisions that are made by various personnel that the patent itself describes as illustrating infected with bias, subjective bias, and is error prone. That's the first thing. The second thing is that these claims, like the claims in Bascom and Finjen, allow for individualized filtering. What they basically say, and this could get lost, there are a lot of claims, a lot of words overall, but basically the filtering policy that's applied is based on the particular account. And that's right in the claims, 3, 4, 5, and it's elsewhere. And that individualized filtering, where you can have a policy for one account and a different policy for another account, is very flexible and by no means something that a post office or office services would be able to do. The third reason is that the data structures here are for more efficient management of a CRM system. The CRM system, typically like a Salesforce system, is a large software system that's dominant in American industry. And then there's an industry of companies such as People AI, a huge innovator, that allow you to process information on a different system, and that has advantages that are described in the record. So those are the three main differences. Starting with the first one, the issue, as I read the case law, and as we all know, this area of the case law is it's not easy for anyone to navigate, but is basically, is this just automation of what's going on? Is this just automation of what people are doing anyway? And there is absolutely nothing in this record that shows that anyone in the office services, in the sales associates, was doing the very specific things that are described in the claims. And just starting with claim 11 of the 345, particularly graphic, is that you select, based on the electric account, one or more filtering policies. So you've got a particular account, and for this person, they don't want X, Y, and Z particular email addresses or something, how they've tailored what they don't want included, or what contracts they don't want included, or whatever's tailored to them. That's a very tailored thing. And then you might apply a regex policy, if that's what that account wants, and you might apply a different policy. Where is that happening in a mailroom? I mean, it's just not. I think the better argument from the other side, which is pivoted to, is, well, it's really what a sales account executive might do. But the reality is the way people would operate in this complex world, this isn't a simple, what's spam, knock it out. This is, you've got many projects, you've got elements of projects, you've got to figure which pieces you want, which personnel in a large organization, many accounts, which one goes in which file. That is a judgment call that a salesperson exercises based on the overall, their experience in the matter and otherwise.
That is a conventional activity I think we would all agree on, right? The sorting out of emails or documents and figuring out which file an email or a document goes into. That was a conventional activity, and I seem to recall the patent seemed to be saying that, you know, that manual process can create errors and it can be very inefficient, but, that's what we're trying to address here.
Right. And what I would say is McRow, which is off-cited, but I think here is really on point, is no different in the sense, and I was involved in that case, so I have more familiarity than I might ordinarily, that people were using morph weight sets and they were doing it in a subjective manual way. So it was conventional in the same way. I don't think the question is, were people doing the overall function? The question is, were people doing the process that's claimed in the patent? And that's what they weren't doing. What they were doing is they were making a subjective call. It refers to human bias in column one. They were making a subjective call based on whatever that person thought at the time. And another person, another department or another contract, another team thought something else. And they were making a gestalt-based call as to, well, this looks like it's related to this, or this looks like this shouldn't go to X and Y. Instead of a systematic way that, just like McRow, where you, once you have a technological problem, you can solve it. Now look, there's probably costs to having it automated with this way, where you have these particular rules, in the sense that maybe sometimes a human could do a better job. But the main point is that it's a different job. What the human is doing is different than having node profiles, selecting a policy based on one of three things, applying one of three policies. I mean, that's not the real world.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, couldn't a human person apply these same filtering rules that are recited in the claim? Like, pick up a given email, read it, and see whether or not it has, I don't know, human resources content, or it has somebody's social security information, and say, well, this doesn't apply to me, or this, I'm going to filter out this email. I mean,
it's a good question, of course.
To use some dangerous language for you, isn't that an abstract mental process?
That would apply in Finjen and Bascom and all those cases, in the sense of, can you take the process that's in the claim and implement it by humans if you really wanted to? If you put enough effort into it with enough humans, with enough note cards as to what they're supposed to do, could you ultimately accomplish that? And that's sort of backwards, right? That's not conventional. That's what could be in the future. So to me, it's sort of a backwards question. The question is, were people doing it? And the record is zilcho on people doing the selecting policies based on individual accounts, having node profiles that are outside of the CRM.
Counsel, let me understand. Appendix page 1067, right? Do you have the appendix with you?
Yes.
Excellent. So this person, Mr. Silva, is this person a person who was arguing on behalf of your client, if I'm not mistaken?
Be honest with you, I'm not sure I know by the name, but let me look at the...
So once you get to there, I was just trying to follow up on this conventional activity point. It looked like they were basically acknowledging that this would be conventional activity and really talking about whether or not you're trying to automate an abstract idea.
If you're referring to lines 6 through 12, and I'm a little on the fly here, so I apologize, as a counsel, the argument is that the patents. So that's just reciting what the argument is. I doubt they conceded they were conventional because it's not true and it would have been against interest. So there's two reasons why I don't think that would have been. But if you're referring to what's at line 8, it says the argument is that.
Right. But what about further down on that same page? Like starting at line 14, for example. So I go on and I drag my emails in and I'm going to manually do that as a person. That's the conventional activity the patent talks about. And then further down at line 19. Now the problem that arises is when you try to automate this abstract idea, when you try to, you know, programmatize it. Use a computer to do it. you run into significant problems, and a big problem you run into is this problem of the API calls. And so, as I guess following up on what Judge Cunningham was inquiring about, this page from the hearing below seems to suggest that, okay, doing all of this sorting of emails and maybe dragging emails over into different files, that's an abstract idea, but once you try to programatize it, automate it, now you're going to run into a technical problem with the act of attempting to automate this abstract idea. So in the end, it appears there's a fair way of reading this as saying, okay, this activity of sorting emails is an abstract idea, but to automate it, we contend what we did was a technical solution to a technical problem. Is that a fair understanding of this page?
I don't think so, and let me explain why.
Okay.
I think this underlines the themes that I've enunciated to start the argument. We're not in a mailroom. We're in a CRM system using computers. So the conventional activity isn't anything that the district court was talking about, or frankly opposing counsel in their briefs about, well, what would happen if someone was doing this? What we have is the way it was done was people, I mean, it couldn't be more haphazard, dragging emails as they see fit on to different files. Now, I don't know about you when you drag them. I drag them. I'm not applying rules or doing any of the things that are being described in terms of a node profile and transmitting into a CRM.
The claims are not limited to CRMs, right? They also are really focused on system of record, which is broader, correct?
That is correct. I think for what the parties have stated, and I think you'll find in their briefs, it's essentially a CRM, but you're right that the specification does include a series of items of which the CRM is the most conspicuous. I think there's sort of some human resource files where it might systems, but the point isn't, the point is that where the objects are in the system of record is different from where you're processing information such as node profile and these relationships. But I do want to go back briefly, which is to say, what was conventional was people were dragging and dropping. That's not telling us anything that they're not doing wasn't subjective. And I think this judgment on the pleadings at this early stage where there's no record that people were doing any of the structural things or the decision-making processes in the prior art makes this case very much like the kinds of cases where, like Bascom, where it's like, on this record, with inferences going for the patentee, we're not going to say that this is just implementing that which was done manually. All that this page says, and it's a good question, is that people were dragging and dropping, and then you have problems. And the problems are the API, which is that you only have a certain amount of calls. So then you have to create new structures. And the new structures are node profiles and other ways of processing information outside of the system of record, which is typically a CRM. So you have that structural point. You have, and I'd be interested what the answer is on the individualization of it. There's just the fact that you can have a different policy set, regex or logic or different things based on each individual. No one has shown that was in the prior art. No one has shown that's conventional. Let me wrap up at this point to say, you know, the problem with this area of the law, as we all know, it's a challenging one. It's not easy. Is this sort of like, well, people knew how to do all this, and so you're just putting in software what everybody knew. And it's at the outset of the case, and people don't even know what a node profile, and a lot of the claim construction seems sloppy.
We're starting explored. I'm having trouble in deciding if there's any way of being more precise about the boundary line between Section 101 and, let's say, 103. And the arguments that I've been hearing could apply just as well to 103 as to 101. But is it correct that all that was considered at this stage in the litigation was 101?
That's correct. And the rigor, if you're going to engage in this, well, this was all known and you're just putting it on a computer, if we're going to do that, it needs to have the rigor and protections of Section 103.
I've got a couple of housekeeping questions.
Of course, obviously, yes, thank you.
Can we focus our analysis on the same claims the district court focused on?
Do
you agree with that?
Yes, that's fine.
Don't need to address any others, right?
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And then my other housekeeping question is there anything in the claims that says that node profiles have to include associations between profiles?
You know, I was preparing for that question, and I believe that the specification supports that, and I don't believe it was contested, and that's the whole point of the node profiles. But this goes to the prematurity point that I was making, which is it just seems to me, it's coming in at the appellate level, that this is like completely under process to be throwing this out based on someone thinking they know exactly what a node profile is, or that what the relationship between the system of record and the data structures such as node profile, I just don't think that's been done in a way that would permit a pleading to throw it out.
Could I think of node profiles as like a Rolodex? Electronic version of a Rolodex, or at least node profiles encompasses an electronic Rolodex where you got all the personal contacts, all these different individual names, and then their associated phone numbers, email addresses, and any other personal information.
With two exceptions. So it's not crazy that there's some element of that. One is that because this is a technological solution to a technological problem, this isn't some broad brush thing, this is for CRM type systems, having them outside of the system where they're in their own data structures that can then be batched over and transmitted, which is what claims require here, makes it different. Like a Rolodex just doesn't have a meaning like that. To me, that to say that's separate from some other thing doesn't make sense. The second thing is Judge Cunningham's good question, which was, are they associated? And yes, there are these. The concept of the node profiles is that they're linked together, associated, and that you can build up this rich environment, which I don't think applies to Rolodex. But if you had a follow up, I'm happy.
Finally, any of the representative claims we've been looking at, do any of them require more than looking at two emails? Some of these claims talk about a first email, a second email, and some of the others, electronic activity, excuse me. And then some of these other claims just talk about, all right, let's.
I want to double check, but I think you're right that it's electronic activity, so it's far more than just email. But yeah, I think you're right that it's two. But to the extent that's suggesting that there isn't individualization or customization, I disagree with that because it clearly says the policy is based on, plus you have two, and that's enough to have that kind of distinction. Judge Cunningham, did you need any housekeeping or otherwise? Anything else?
No, I'm going to stop.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you all very much.
Okay, we'll save you rebuttal time. Let's hear from the other side. Mr. Navikov.
Good morning. Gene Navikov for Appellee Clary. I'd like to actually start by addressing the question that Judge Cunningham asked toward the end of Mr. Reines' argument, which is, do the claims require associations between node profiles? And Mr. Reines gave an answer that I thought was a little bit curious in view of the fact that below the appellant, people.ai, wrote, people.ai is stating that a node graph, which is this network of associations that Judge Cunningham was referencing, is not a requirement in the claim. That's on Appendix 5551, and I'm not sure how that can be much clearer. Going back to the sort of overall gestalt here, this court held in the Symantec case that, quote, it was long prevalent practice for people receiving paper mail to look at an envelope and discard certain letters without opening them from sources from which they did not wish to receive mail based on characteristics of the mail. The list of relevant characteristics could be kept in a person's head, characterizing email based on a known list of identifiers is no less abstract. What these claims add to that description of the claims in the Symantec case is trivial at best. They say the Symantec claim said you can look at the sources and use them to discard mail that you may consider to be junk or spam. These claims say, well, you can look at the sources, or you can look at keywords in the message, or you can look for patterns in the message, like social security numbers or credit card numbers, or things like this. And then once you've done that, you could look at the sender and the recipient, and you can file the email. Under this court's decision in Fair Warning IP, asking those sorts of questions, which are questions that salespeople dragging emails to folders, which is admitted to have been the conventional practice, precisely the questions that those salespeople would have asked. They would have looked at, what is this email about? Do I recognize a word in it? They would have filed the email based on that. Who is this email from? What company file or deal is it associated with? File the email based on that. If it has somebody's credit card number or something like that, you flag it for special treatment as containing.
Do you have to win on this prior art theme of, you know, whether these particular filtering policies were known in the prior art and were used in the before in order to get an affirm here? Because in the end, these are all part and parcel of some abstract mental process, arguably.
I think that's right, Your Honor. I think that this court has had no hesitation ruling in cases like Symantec, in cases like content extraction, that things like this are a long practiced economic activity, business practice, and you do not require evidence in the record that there were specific people doing these specific things.
Right, that's the point I'm trying to get at. If what the claim is doing is automating something that humans could do, that humans could practice on their own, regardless of whether humans had in fact practiced that set of thinking steps before in the art, doesn't matter, because in the end what we're dealing with, we've translated that kind of analysis, mental analysis, as being an abstract idea.
I think that's exactly right, and that's exactly the reasoning that the court engaged in the excerpt that I read from the Intellectual Ventures v. Symantec case. I think that's exactly right, and I really want to emphasize, Mr. Reines gave individualized filtering as an example of something that was complicated or technological and not something that a salesperson would have done. There's only one claim that's addressed in the briefs that has this notion of selecting a filtering policy based on the electronic account. It's claim 11 of the 345 patent. And all it says, and I would welcome Mr. Reines to correct me, I don't think I'm oversimplifying at all. All it says is you look at whose correspondence you're working with and you apply different rules based on who that person is. And that's it. So that limitation would 100% be satisfied by a salesperson applying the rule that an email from my wife shouldn't be filed in a company file, because that's a rule that's specific to him and it's something that he's perfectly
capable
of.
You're right, that example sounds a tad trivial, but I guess Mr. Reines' larger point is that what the claimed invention is perhaps directed to is this customization of a filtering process. And so we have this custom-tailored filter that creates a lot of flexibility, because now across a whole set of individuals, you can have a customized filtering going on. And so in that sense, does that get him closer to something that could be argued as improving the functionality of the computer as opposed to merely running an abstract idea on a computer?
I don't think it does in this case. I think it would certainly theoretically be possible to patent and claim a method of customization that enables implementing it in a large corporate structure. I actually think the FinGen case is a good example of that, because In FinGen, what you had was an exploit of the way that the internet works and the way that ISPs work. I'm thinking of Bascom. I apologize. That's right. Bascom is a good example of that because you're exploiting the way that internet works and the way that ISPs work, and you're saying, well, if you put the filter at the ISP can tell who is making the request and can implement personalized filtering policies without letting the teenager and the computer mess with the filters. You don't have that here. You here just have the statement, customize it. Based on the electronic account, select one or more filtering policies associated with the data source provider. There was a reference to the selection then of keywords or regular expressions or a logic-based policy. But again, it's disjunctive. That would just be satisfied by the selecting the keyword policy and having the salesperson look for his wife's name in the mail.
I just want to close the loop on something that you brought my attention to. If you look at Appendix 5551 to 5552, you were talking about mm-hmm. node graphs. I just want to close the loop on that. When I turn to the top of 5552, it seems to clarify that people.ai is stating that a node graph is not a requirement in the claim, but it's not arguing that nodes do not need to be associated with one another. So I guess what I'm trying to make sure I understand correctly is it seems like node associations is something different than node graphs. I thought that you were implying that they were the same when I heard you speak earlier. I just want to make sure I understand.
I think that I may let Mr. Weinberg address this at the risk of having sandbagged him because this is from his matter. But I think that it ended below is that people.ai conceded that they needed to plead some sort of association between two records, which is to say, like if you had a record for a person and there was a company name in there, and then you had a separate record from a company, that qualified as an association. So I think to go that far, they conceded that that was required. But this notion of a node graph, whereas Mr. Reines was saying you had a network of different profiles connected in different ways, and that could be strengthened in various dynamic and intelligent ways as you build up more information, that I think unequivocally got disclaimed.
And you agree that the only claims we need to address are the ones that the district court focused on?
I do agree. And I will, if the court has no more questions, cede the rest of my time to my colleague.
Okay, let's hear from Mr. Weinberg.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Good morning. Jonathan Weinberg, First at Sale. May it please the court. We've covered a lot of ground and I'm batting cleanup here, so I would love to address a number of issues, but more than anything, I'd love to address any issues that Your Honors have that's outstanding, and perhaps that's the node profile issue.
Yeah, he suggested that you were going to say something about it, so I expected you to say something about it, so go for it.
Absolutely. The node profile was something that was litigated for more than a year, so I kind of want to push back a bit Mr. Reines' suggestion that this is done on the pleadings and nobody knows what's going on here. There was initially a motion to dismiss. We said, what is a node profile? They said, oh, it's just a data structure that corresponds to a person. And we said, okay, well, we don't think that that's very specific. The case was dismissed because they didn't have a node graph suggested. Following that, they said, okay, a node graph is not really required. That's how they moved for leave to amend to file a new complaint, and they said a node graph is not required. On the back of that, the district court allowed them to file the second amended complaint. Then they went all the way to summary judgment briefing, and they proposed a node profile claim construction that just said that it is a data structure corresponding to a person. And what they accused in the set sail system was that the set sail system had a data structure that was a contact. And they said, look, here is a person, so contact, that's a node profile. And there are connections between the node profiles because a profile has the name of the company where that person works at. And if it has the name of the company, well, then that's kind of pointing to another profile. Bob works at Coca-Cola, therefore Bob is associated with Coca-Cola. So kind of bringing this back down to reality, to what kind of technologies were actually being accused here. They're really very basic things. It's really easy to decide this case if we just keep in mind what the prior art was, the admitted system, right? What did the inventors claim that they invented here? And that is, they admit that there was a salesperson who received an email from Bob at Coca-Cola, that salesperson thought in their head, I know who Bob is, I associate him with a profile in my head. I know who Coca-Cola is, I associate that with a profile in my head. I know that this email is probably concerning this deal that I'm working on with Bob about selling a bunch of bottles to Coca-Cola. So I know that this email concerns based on who sent the email. And all of these functions and inventive concepts they all exist in exactly that prior art system. The idea here being we're going to replace the salesperson with a computer that does all these same things automatically. And there's nothing new. We ask, for example, the email comes in and it's from the salesperson's wife. He knows it's personal. So he sees his wife's email address. He doesn't put it into the CRM database. So what's so interesting about a computer doing the same thing? Remember, the rules are a lot.
That's not really, this is a section 101 action.
Well, the section 101 question under McCrow is the computer operating in a way that is foundationally, fundamentally different than how a person would operate? And in this case, the answer is no, because the person sees the email is from his wife and decides not to put it into the CRM. The computer sees that the email is from a specific email address and decides not to put it into the CRM. It's the same rule, right? As for the user-tailored rules, just one comment on that. That doesn't appear in the 229 and 129 patents, which are asserted against Zetsail. There is a contention that they appear there. I don't see where that is. So that particular argument doesn't really fly for Zetsail. But I will say that in the analog context, of course, every person would apply their own rules, wouldn't they? When email from one person's wife comes in, as opposed to somebody else's wife, there's going to be different rules, right? So I don't know what's so specific about having the filtering being done, having different policies for different people. Are there any other questions about the node profiles or outside of CRM stuff? They did make a big deal at the end about the data being analyzed outside the CRM, but we see that this is, again, what the salesperson was doing, analyzing the data in their head, associating Bob with the profile, and deciding whether or not to store that in the CRM.
I think the argument goes that this is a technical improvement because now you can do batch updates without having to rely on the much larger load of API calls.
Right. In order to make that argument, they would have to point to something in the spec or in the claims or anywhere that says that prior art systems didn't do it this way, didn't have the capability to do batch updates. That was the distinction between University of Florida and Bascom. You see at the end of University of Florida, that's exactly the distinction they made. In that case,
it's not whether the prior art systems do it this way. That's 103. The question is, do the prior art systems do it at all?
Right. Well, the question is that described as an inventive concept anywhere in the record? Right? Does the patent itself say, you know, previous systems did it this way, we did it a new way, we invented this, it was beneficial, it created fewer API calls? If there's nothing like that in the record, there's nothing like that in the spec, it's hundreds of pages of spec, there's nothing like that in any of the pleadings, nothing, and they spent 60 paragraphs in the complaint talking about why this is 101 eligible. They didn't mention this concept once. They came up with it at the 101 stage, and that's where you see Mr. Silva going straight to it. I see that my time is up, and I'm happy to answer any more questions if you have
any more questions. Thank you. Mr. Reines.
Thank you, Your Honor. So the statement that I heard that got the biggest reaction was, you can just argue what's long practiced and you don't need any proof. And then what was argued is the key issue is whether what is being automated in the software system technologically is fundamentally different from how people worked. but that we don't need to put evidence in of how what people actually did. How could that be right? How could it be right that we don't need to know what actually went before to determine if this is just automating that which happened? The Coca-Cola example is just, I mean, that I don't think maps to what wouldn't meet the claims, for one thing. And two, I mean, it's laughable how it caricatures the claims. And two is there's no evidence in the record that's what they did. We know they drag drop. We know there was human bias in doing it. It was error prone because everyone has a different impression of what might be related to which project or all the variety of things this covers. But the main point, and this goes to Judge Chen, what seems to be your concern is, well, if you can take our 354 patent, 345 patent, claim 11, and go out and get 100 workers to do it on pieces of paper, then it's invalid, which is like reverse 103. It's even worse than doing 103 and 101. It's reverse 103. But that breaks down, Your Honor, that maybe that passes for step one in a rough justice world of 101. But it can't be right for step two. For step two to show that doing all of the things that are in these claims with node profiles and doing out of the system where you transmit to the system of record what you figured out and you've selected each of them based on the account and you've done all of those things, that was conventional, right? That couldn't possibly be inventive to put these series of things together because it's long been practiced, but we don't need to put evidence in. That can't be the standard. That can't be the way we do this. And then to have the insult to injury is the end of the argument is we're required, right? The burden's on them, clear and convincing evidence. We're required to come forward and show that the prior art doesn't have certain things, which is really turning things upside down. I think this area of the law is already the Wild West. And to do this on a pleadings motion where we don't even know whether there needs to be associations in the node profile. We have counsel standing up saying it's not a node profile network, which is a different thing than whether there's associations, which we all know that there now is a concession that associations are required. So the judge was proceeding on the concept that wasn't required. So what we need to do is do claim construction, not this is one claim that where there were summary judgment papers filed, there wasn't full fact discovery for the case, there wasn't decisions on any of the summary judgment. We need a claim construction proceeding on these relevant concepts and then develop what's actually being argued as the baseline of what's been automated rather than just saying, it's been long practiced, good enough. Thank you. Unless there's any questions.
Thank you. Thanks to all. The case is taken under submission. That concludes this panel's arguments for today.
Thank you.